which happens on February 18th. That's the ingress of the nodal axis, which will move into a different signs about every year and a half. And then since Mars is going to be in Libra for a long time, including the latter degrees around Spica, we then have the North Node with Spica and with Mars. So well, this is just another symbol of the importance of, it's kind of like, finally, after many, many, many years, it's like Libra is back in the focus. after being in the astrological community since about 1970, I've seen the shifting fashions of, what signs are considered to be the glamour ones and which ones all the negative jokes or the disparaging comments are thrown at. And Libra has really not been in favor, I would say, over the last 10 or 15 years. There's all kinds of disparagement of Libra, poor Libra and everything else. It's been a hard time for Libra, with so much emphasis on autonomy and sovereignty and challenges in anything resembling old paradigm of relationship, and rightly so. But now we're seeing the reinvigoration of, we could say, the rebirth of Libra at a different octave, a different level, on the foundation of autonomy and sovereignty, but recognizing the importance of collaboration and conscious equal partnership.
I want to throw in here too that I think will be important, just to give you a sense of how rare this is mm-hmm. that it takes about 18 and a half years for the nodes to come back to a starting point. And Mars can only have its retrograde in Libra every 15 to 17 years. So for them to actually come together, it has been a long time, and I'll do the research and find out what the exact information is about that. But that gives us a sense of that this is really a major in addition to the fact that it's in this Grand Cross and Durant's Little Square and the whole thing that's going on. It's like then you throw in the nodal axis activation that's going on, mm-hmm. as well as the fact that Vesta. And Vesta happens to be going retrograde. Vesta's already in Libra, going retrograde in Libra, and will be in Libra between the North Node and Mars at the time of the new Mars cycle starting. And I haven't looked to see how long she's there, but she's there for quite a long time, adding her energy, and she's only there every 4 years and not always retrograde in that time. So, again, so many amazing events coming together to really spotlight this whole
Vesta in Libra as part of the whole dance is actually, if we wanted to think what that means, it's one simple little way of thinking about it is the bringing of sacredness to relationship.
Exactly. And with the North Node there, it's part of our destiny to do that.
And just as over the last year we've been talking about the rarity, the extreme rarity of the North Node happening with Scorpio, with Saturn in Scorpio, we're going to be able to share with you how unusual it is to have the North Node and Libra, and then with Mars there at the same time.
And then just because we're not done with the whole Libra piece exactly yet, because the Mercury retrograde is mm-hmm. going to station direct at 16 Libra on October 25th. So we have another activation that will be happening later in the year with Mercury moving into that spot and being retrograde and hanging out in Libra for quite a long time as well.
Yeah, the last couple of years, the three Mercury retrograde times have been in water signs. And in 2014, the three Mercury retrograde times are in air signs.
They go retrograde in water, but they go direct in air. And so the overtone or the energy that's going to be activated, because when we look at the synodic cycle of Mercury, we're looking at the station direct point to see what the energy is that's being carried forth into the next synodic cycle, is all air for 2014.
Yeah. So though that's just adding the synodic cycle material, the Mercury retrograde cycles, and the new synodic cycles of Mercury to our investigation here. So maybe the next thing we can talk about would be the eclipses and how then that relates to the lunar standstill, out of bounds story.
Yeah.
There are two eclipse seasons in 2014 and four eclipses. So there's the first eclipse season includes the two eclipses of April 15th and April 29th. April 15th is a total lunar eclipse at around 25 Libra. There will be another total lunar eclipse on October 8th at about 15 Aries. So the one in April is a north node alignment, and the one in October is a south node alignment. The one that's happening in April is visible, I believe, over all of North America. The one in October will hit the West Coast in the Pacific Ocean. So they both will be seen on the West Coast of America, if I'm not mistaken here. I did not get my Guy Ottwalt's astronomical calendar, so I did not research this. It's hard to get these things mailed to you when you're over here in the Philippines. And then also, what I'm wanting to mention about these eclipse seasons is that that the next few years, including 2014, the emphasis is on lunar eclipses, not solar eclipses. There's an annular solar eclipse, April 29, a very minor partial solar eclipse, October 23rd. But the emphasis over the next couple of years really is on the lunar eclipses, as if to bring our emphasis to the lunar standstill phenomena, which starts again in 2014. It's called the minor lunar standstill. We changed our language
inner.
On this.
Yes, it's the inner lunar standstill.
Yeah. So the outer standstill is when the moon is way out beyond 23.5 degrees at the solstices. And then the inner standstill is that during the solstices, the position of the moon is way inside the track of the sun.
And I really got to see that at the December full moon right near the solstice, because I was expecting the moon to be rising a little further north. And yep. I was, and then it was like, oh, wait, we're in the minor or the inner standstill. So, of course, it rose not far north. It rose in between where I was expecting it to rise. And so it's already very visible. You can really tune into it when you're at a full moon time near the solstices.
The ancient people around the world were quite aware of this phenomena that you can actually see quite pronounced by the rising and setting of the moon, and they actually created stone circles, they placed kivas, they did different walls, they built walls in certain alignments, Chaco Canyon, Callanish stone circles all over northern Scotland and Ireland that are marking this, actually through Sweden also. I mean, basically certain latitudes, it's easier to be more dramatic with it. But the fact is that 2014-2015 will be this inner standstill time, which creates out-of-bounds moons. And then, pardon?
They're not out of bounds. The inner standstill is not out of bounds.
Well, it is out of bounds with relative to where the track of the sun is.
Okay, right. But, it's not going outside the boundaries of the sun.
It's inside the boundaries or outside the boundaries. I would consider to be, you know, pretty much equally valid. I mean, the ancients considered that to be equally valid. So that's definitely part of our research at this point, is regarding this out-of-bounds phenomena, both the inner and the outer standstills.
And that also does create occultations over certain star patterns, and that's something we went into more detail in the of the class that we did on the lunar standstill and the eclipses, because that's also very fascinating, because as the moon is shifting its declination, not going out as far or going out further, there's different stars that are activated by that process.
And in 2014, interestingly, there's really only one of the main visible bright stars along the ecliptic that will have any occultations, which is one of your favorite ones.
Yeah, it's my personal star, Zubin El-Janoubi, at 15 Scorpio in the constellation of Scales. And so the moon, it just happens to go right over the top of that particular star for the next few months when it is in that part of the sky, covering and uncovering it in an occultation. So, yeah, very cool. And then it'll be next year, 2015, Aldebaran will be the primary star that's going to be occulted. Last year it was Pica that was being occulted.
One thing that I love to do whenever I'm contemplating at the beginning of the year what the year is going to be like, one of the ways that I tune in is to actually sense into how far the different planets are moving that year. So I think it's worth considering, and it gives you a good sense of the importance of the planetary motion and getting tuning into the nature of planetary initiations. So in 2014, Pluto begins at 11:15 Capricorn. And by the beginning of 2015, it has only reached 13:09 Capricorn.
It actually goes retrograde at 13:34.
Yes.
Or 35, yeah. So
and then it will go back to 10:59. So that's not a huge range. And that's usually the way it is with Pluto. It's maybe 2.5 degree difference from year to year. Neptune begins at 3:13 Pisces. It will actually go all the way up to 7:35 Pisces, retrograde in June, go back to 4:47 Pisces, and then by the beginning of 2015 will be at 5:23 Pisces. So if we're looking at that, it's only slightly more than 2 degrees from the beginning of one year to the beginning of the next year. Uranus begins at 8:40 Aries. It actually then, in around springtime, it really speeds up. It starts moving pretty fast, and it goes all the way up to 16:30 Aries. And in July, retrogrades, goes all the way back to 12 and in December, and then by the beginning of 2015, it's at 12:36. So it's moved about 4 degrees from the beginning of 2014 to the beginning of 2015. And then Saturn. Saturn begins at 2021 Scorpio. It will actually go up to 23, make it to 23 by March 3rd, 2319 Scorpio, retrogrades. Goes back to 16 Scorpio in July 20th, then goes direct, ingresses into Sagittarius December 24th. And January 1st, 2015, is at 0 Sag 52. It is going to retrograde back into Scorpio for a short time period in 2015. And then last, as far as any usefulness of looking at this, because the other planets move so fast, is Jupiter, which begins at 16:07 Cancer on the first of the year. It is going to then, it's in retrograde motion, and it will go back to 10 degrees, 26 minutes Cancer on March 6th. Then it starts moving really fast direct. It just starts really fast moving through Leo. It ingresses into Leo July 17th and will actually reach 22 degrees all the way to 22 Leo by December 8th, when it finally hits a retrograde point, and then by the first of January 2015, it's at 21 Leo. So there's certain portions in the Jupiter cycle and the Uranus cycle where they're moving really fast, particularly Jupiter. After it goes direct in March, it just starts going so fast, and it's just kind of, in a period of just a few months, makes it through a really large part of Leo before it retrogrades. So that's just to give you a flavor of the motion and the movement of the planets in 2014. Let's see, what about Chiron? Well, Chiron begins the year at 9:58 Pisces, and then by the time we get to January 1st, 2015, it's at 13:46 Pisces. Bringing Chiron into the story reminds me of something you had been bringing up when we talked about this before our call, Kaylin, which is the additional way in which the Grand Trine in water is operating?
Yes, yeah. So we last year, you may remember, we talked a lot about the Grand Water Trine with Saturn in Scorpio. We have Chiron and Neptune in Pisces and Jupiter in Cancer. And this Grand Trine is actually going to continue with Chiron, Jupiter, and Saturn into the next year. And there actually was another Earth trine that happened in July of last year, creating something that was called the Star of David or the Grand Sextile or a Star Tetrahedron that we talked about and shared a lot of information about. And so what's going to happen is in May 13th, Chiron and Jupiter will come into their exact trine at, 17 Pisces or 18 Pisces Cancer. Then May 24th, Jupiter is at 19 Cancer, Saturn's at 19 Scorpio, so they're in their exact trine. And I guess it's 17 because Chiron's at 17 Pisces at that time, so very close. It's a very tight grand trine there. And then on June 13th, we'll have Saturn trine Chiron at 18 degrees. And by then, Jupiter's at 23, but still keeping that grand trine pretty active.
The exact Jupiter trine Saturn is May 24th at 19 Cancer 02, 19 Scorpio 02.
Yes, right. Yeah. And Chiron's around 17. So it's pretty close. That's actually probably the closest one at that particular point. But anyway, basically, that whole Grand Trine water energy is going to be really powerfully active for the month of May and June. And then by July, Jupiter moves on into Leo, so that'll be completed.
And the only other major outer planet trine phenomena that I noticed, and this is due to the fact that Jupiter is going to be moving so fast into Leo, is that on September 25th, right around the fall equinox, Jupiter will trine Uranus at 14 Leo, 14 Aries.
Right, so that may give a boost to Aries, the Aries part of the whole T-square thing that's going on around that time.
And then a reminder then as we're moving now that we're thinking more toward the end of 2014 is that probably the most important event there in the latter part of the year is the sixth of the Uranus-Pluto squares, and that will be Uranus retrograde square Pluto December 15th at 12.5 Aries, 12.5 Capricorn. The Uranus-Pluto square coming up April 21st is with Pluto retrograde. And then the one, as I mentioned, at the end of the year is with Uranus retrograde. They've kind of been alternating. And then the very final one, interestingly, in March of 2015, they're both direct. And then that's it. They then begin separating. These exact squares seem to work best as far as interpreting them, when an individual has something personal on their chart, angles or planets that are those degrees. As far as a planetary process, and we're actually looking at a time frame in history that's way beyond just 2012 to 2015. When these planets are within 10 degrees of each other, they basically describe great changes in the culture and movements of history and so on. I mean, that's pretty much the Richard Tarnas and Dane Rajar theory on it, that you're looking at much larger orbs to describe what's happening in a culture. But the 2012 to 2015 time is right, kind of like the bullseye point on it. And particularly for individuals that have those degrees on their chart, they're going to be on the front lines of what's taking place. I wanted to mention here, you know, before we, you know, get close to wrapping this up, that certainly it's an intense time. It's not a time period that you can easily light polarize about. I frequently get questions, you know, like, hey, is the intensity, is the change, is it going to back off? Is there going to be a relief from this? And if you're using astrology, I would say absolutely not. In fact, it's just going to up till 2019, 2020, because actually Saturn will move up to being conjunct Pluto. You know, so we have some actually more, even more dramatic alignments that are coming up at the end of this decade. So that we have to really be willing to let go of our assumptions about how we really thought things are or were. Can't really be attached. And when we're facing the intensity of change, the breakdown of thousands of years of history, and particularly the final, hopefully, I mean, this is certainly in the intent anyway, to break the trance that's happened to humanity because of that triple aberration of patrilineal family descent, hierarchical patriarchy, and non-atheistic religions. I mean, the movement is of the union of all those things has created an aberration in human history. For far longer periods of time, human beings have been gigantic, cooperative, not the way the warlike, competitive version of humans. That's a whole other thing that I write about and talk about all the time. I don't want to go further into that at this moment. But as we go through these changes, the intensity of these changes, would like to offer a suggestion about how to see what's taking place. And that's using the shamanic astrology framework. It's to look at all of these events that might be happening in the world or in our own lives on three levels simultaneously. Three levels, three worlds. Shamanism 101, upper world, middle world, lower world. Celestial world, middle world, and underworld, or the lower world. And all three things are happening simultaneously. So from the perspective of the transcendent, or the upper world, or the celestial world, everything is fine. All is well. The universe is unfolding as it should. Simultaneously, the underworld is also happening. And that is that annihilation could happen at any instant. Surrender is required all the time. Who we take ourselves to be isn't really who we are. Our identities that we hold on to so strongly are just facsimiles and constructions. And what is really required is being in touch with our inner self, who we really are, our connection to spirit. And these surrender things that are taking place are necessary to remember who we are. And then simultaneously is the middle world, the so-called real world. Can be looked at from so many different angles, you know, from the varieties of the scenarios that, you know, it's already too late. The world can't possibly be fixed. And the oceans really are dead. and so on, to all the things we really can do to make a change, to take our place on the wheel of life, as what is our role on the planet at a time of great change, at the time period of the shifting of the ages, and placing 2014 into that larger context, that we are still somewhere near the middle of this great turning of the ages, the shift from one degree, every 72 years, the center point, which was about 1998. And so we can go back to the early 1960s. We can extend it till about 2035, and we can see that being the time frame of this great shift of ages that takes us back to the previous great shift of ages, 6,500 years ago, the beginning of recorded history, 13,000 years ago, the time period of the great ice melting and the dispersal of the sea peoples around the planet, and the cataclysms that occurred at that particular point. Big stories, and we're right smack in the middle of the next big story. What will it really mean? Is it really the age of singularity, and we'll all be downloading our consciousness into silicon chips? Or is it the renaissance of shamanism and the revitalization of our Earth Mother, and the way of reconnecting human beings to the land and the sky? I certainly will do whatever I can to make it be the second of those two possibilities.
Let's hope we all join together in that choice, yes.
Or maybe some interesting synthesis of those different pathways. So were we intending to open this up, or to just have?
Well, I think it might be really great to open it up, and if anybody has a question, a comment, an insight, an aha, something that you'd like to share, it would be great to hear from you. We'll take a few of those, and then we can wrap this up. So I'm going to turn on the Q&A, and if you'd like to be a part of this, then you press *6. That will put you in the queue, and you can ask a question or make a comment, share an insight or an aha. And if nobody jumps in, then we will be done.
We do have a question. We have a question from Lynn.
Oh, okay, great.
Yes.
I'm just curious. If a person is in a Jupiter return, let's say 30 degrees NATO Jupiter, does that kind of make the person by transference also in the Uranus blue square? Because I will let Jupiter in.
I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, so what you're saying, if a person is in a Jupiter return, and so that they're in a Jupiter return, meaning that their Jupiter is in Cancer, and it's at 13 Cancer, what would the implication of that be?
Would it kind of make you join the Uranus Pluto?
So she's saying, does that actually make you join the Uranus Pluto square? And I would say, sure, absolutely. But I think it's a way of writing it out in a really positive way. You're at a point of empowerment in your life. You have Jupiter in Cancer, and if it's a Jupiter return, and so that gives you a way of riding the wave rather than being hit by the wave.
I like that imagery. That's a great imagery.
It's still gonna be big waves, but if you can either be hit by the wave, or you can be a surfer riding the wave. And I think if you have the Jupiter return in Cancer at this time period, then you have a far greater chance of of really directing your flow. You're at your power point with the Jupiter return, so you're using the strength of both Pluto and Uranus in order to take yourself to the next place.
Now, I think that's absolutely true. And if a person hasn't been doing their work and is stuck, is depressed, is unhealthy, or whatever's going on for them, their life's a mess, it could magnify all of that as well.
Right.
So yes, if you've been doing your work and you're ready to catch that wave, right on. And if you haven't been, you'll probably get to find out.
Yeah, so it is an opportunity to take advantage, to take on what your Jupiter mission actually is. And if you don't, then the Uranus-Pluto effect is likely to have you be knocked off the wave. Rather, you're not even ready to ride it.
Right, it'll feel like a smackdown rather than, you know, the opportunity to jump on a wave and have fun, ride that wave, and for some grand time.
Right.
Yeah.
So, good.
Well, we have another question. We have somebody else in the queue. Is that all from Lynn?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, Lynn. Here we go. I think this might be Emma.
Hi, this is Emma, yes, and I'm on my Skype. So, anyway, I've... fascinated with what's going on here. I was thinking back, let me clear my throat. When I was born and lived as a child in Texas, I lived in a very country society. We had ice boxes, we rode horses to go do a lot of our transportation, a lot of our shopping. We lived with very few physical conveniences, a wood belly stove for our heating and everything. I have now lived long enough to be able to enjoy this wonderful electronic age. And I'm hoping that our future is going to be a blending of the realization of who we really are and utilizing what we have. I don't want to lose it. So I'm hoping that we have that ability. And there's another way that I'm looking at this whole thing. With this cardinal square that I have that was in the cardinal signs, in the householder signs. And now, again, I'm having this energy all come in into the householder signs. I think we are finishing off what we started and didn't do and failed so miserably in that Second World War. I think in this day and age, we are going to have to face all of the things we did not do. Mm-hmm. We had such a great opportunity then that we lost.
Oh, that's entirely true. I mean, these decisions, particularly the U.S. made at the end of World War II, if you look back on it, it's like they could have made some very, very different choices and we'd have a different world today. But they decided basically to have a Cold War and to continue to have the weapons industry dominate everything. And the world that got created from those decisions is what we're faced with here. And the shadow of that is hitting the United States big time now.
You know, I've just finished reading some more of Kurt Vonnegut's memoirs. And Vonnegut wrote most of his work, started his work, after being a prisoner of war
right.
in the Second World War and the Dresden episode.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because he's so well, in all of his stories and his lectures and everything, points out what we could have done.
Right, I know it's true.
Yeah. And it's but I think our role now is to bring humanity back together again and take advantage of this Libra partnership cooperation energy that's being really, really fostered for us, especially with this Jupiter energy coming in.
Jupiter in Cancer is definitely giving us that. It's got to be all of us as a world family. I mean, otherwise, Buckminster Fuller would be proven right that we failed our final examination.
Right. But I, because I've had Sagittarius fire, am very, very hopeful for humanity. I think I'm seeing the little signs occurring all over the place of people starting to come together and saying, hey, let's do organic gardening. Let's work in our communities. Let's do these things. Let's not bow to all of this crap that's trying to be fostered on us. But the crap is there so that we can wake up. If we don't have the crap, we don't wake up.
That's the advantage we have in this paradigm, is what I was suggesting, that we look at this always simultaneously with the three worlds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Being completely reality-based upon what's actually happening, but also having that view, which is that actually all is well and the universe is unfolding as it should, both simultaneously.
And I hope we all, as a group, don't have to come back in and repeat this whole lesson again.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm with you, Emma. I really appreciate your wisdom and your insights. So thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's definitely one of our wise elders who can take us back to how it was before.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Emma. So if anybody else would like, you have a quick chance here. I'll give you one more chance. Star 6 put you in the queue. Otherwise, we're going to get ready to wrap this up and really appreciate everyone who's been on the call and who will be hearing this later if you couldn't be on the call. Just anything you want to say in conclusion, Daniel, before we...
Well, we'll go back to our regular monthly perspectives, the beginning of February, and we'll come up with a date on that here soon. You know, we'll go back to the monthly calls. But this is a bonus for everybody, so gave us a chance to riff about 2014, and we're, as always, always open for your feedback and questions and... suggestions to be able to serve our members as best we can. So,
indeed, and just the reminder that we are all in this together. So it's great to know we're taking the journey together, and just wishing everybody a happy new year.
So, indeed, happy new year, everyone, and talk to you down the road.
Thank you.